Welcome to Martha Runs the World, a podcast with a new take on running, fitness, and all things health-oriented. I'm Martha Hughes, your host, and each week I present a new topic that is of interest to all runners. Welcome back to episode 142 of Martha Runs the World. I am so happy you join me. I'm always very happy you join me, of course. This week, I have a great guest. It's all about ultra running in the mountains and Canada and actually all over the world. My guest today is Jeff Peltier. He lives in British Columbia. He is an amazing videographer, and he has made some great films. I'm not going to say amazing 20 times, but they really are. He's made some incredible films, and we'll talk about that with him and go over some of his adventures in British Columbia and in Europe and some other places that he has raced and run. And we'll do that very shortly. Also, in this week's Tales of the Trail, it's much more positive than last week. I'm sorry it was all about not fun topics last week, but sometimes it is what it is. This week, it's all about races that happened over last week. I actually have four races that happened and some totals, so we'll go over that. So stay tuned for that. But first, here is Jeff Peltier. Will you welcome to the program extraordinary runner, videographer, and just all around really, really excellent person, Jeff Peltier. Hi, Jeff. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing well, thanks. Happy to be here.
Thank you so much for being on my program. I know there's a lot of other stuff you do, but I really wanted to have you on my show because I've been watching your videos and they're just amazing. When we will talk about that in a minute, but you live up in British Columbia, right?
I do, in Vancouver. Okay. Beautiful, beautiful British Columbia. I'm actually right kind of in the mountains as well. I'm in North Vancouver here.
You have such an abundance of trails where you live. When you go out, do you ever have a hard time choosing which one to take?
Yeah, it's often a debate, especially for weekend plans. You know, we're humming and hawing. Do we go north to Whistler area? Do we head east out to Chilliwack area? Do we stay local just in our backyard? We have, as you say, an abundance of choices here. We're very, very spoiled.
did you start out as a road runner?
I did. I started running when I turned 27, and I remember it pretty clearly because I remember reading somewhere that 27 is supposed to be your physical peak or something, and I didn't feel like I was at the peak of much at the time. And a friend of mine actually had just got a book. I think it was the Hal Higdon's first marathon book or something, and he was training for his first marathon, and I thought, well, if he can do it, maybe I can do it. And he ended up actually hurting his back. So he said, well, here, let me give you the book and you can use it. And that was kind of the start of my journey. And I did about, I think I did three or four seasons of road running until I was about 30. And I discovered this thing called trail running and ultimately ultra distance trail running.
They say we're 27 for other athletes, but I really don't think that's endurance. You see more and more the older athletes on the trails, especially.
100%, and especially the longer the distance, I think experience becomes as important, if not more important than pure fitness.
Absolutely, absolutely. What is your favorite race distance?
That's hard to say. I the last couple of years, so I just ran a 100-miler here in Quebec, out east in Canada, and that was the shortest race I've done in a few years. The last couple of seasons, I've been doing sort of the 200-plus-mile distance. So multiple days, with very, very little sleep. I like staged racing. So staged racing, so that's sort of a non-answer because it's a staged race is where you're doing maybe 6 days of running, back to back. And maybe you're doing a 50K, then a 40K, then a 50 miler. But the idea is you're kind of trying to pace it strategically, but you are sleeping in between each day. And so you sort of get a mix of the strategy that comes with the longer distance, but at closer to the pace of what you would normally run a 50K. And I really like that. And that's actually going to be my next race here that we could talk about. I'm doing a stage race coming up in at the end of October. Oh, so I'm excited to get back to that. I've only done one before and it was a really great experience.
Oh, cool. Well, which one is that? Which one are you
So doing? The one I'm doing is part of the Racing the Planet series. And Racing the Planet, they've been around for, I think, 25 years doing what they call the Four Desert Series. So they hold a series of four races around the world. And the one I'm doing coming up is the Namib Desert Race in Namibia.
Oh, awesome. I was going to ask you about warm weather races, because the races that I've seen you do are mostly the cooler weather ones in the mountains.
Mostly in the Alps the last couple of seasons, although it does get quite warm as well in sort of September in the Alps. You're dealing with heat in the valleys and then colder temperatures and storms up high. So you get a mix of both. But I have done some desert running. The stage race I did back in 2015 was called the Grand to Grand Ultra. And it runs from the Grand Canyon to the Grand Staircase, so from Arizona to Utah through the desert. And I find I actually like warm weather running, provided it's a dry heat. So I like running in the desert. Just a few weeks ago here, I ran in Quebec, and Quebec is very humid in the summer. And it was temperatures got up to 40 degrees Celsius. I'm not sure what that is in Fahrenheit, but it's with humidity. It was, you know, it's like being in Hawaii where you just don't, your sweat doesn't evaporate. You know, you just get drenched in sweat. And I decided that I don't like humidity quite as much as I do the dry heat.
It feels like you're swimming.
That's just it. And you just can't, your body just can't thermoregulate in the same way that you can, you know, often in the desert, you know, it gets cool at night in the desert and there's often a breeze. So you have to be careful of the sun, but it's not the same kind of heat that you would get again in, you know, a humid, you know, under a canopy or in a river valley or something where it's just, you know, you're just wet, right? It's a little different. So.
Yeah. I prefer the warmer weathers as opposed to the humid, the dry, warmer weathers. It's much easier to adapt to, I think. So, sure. So have you ever thought of doing the Cocodona 250?
I have some friends who ran that recently. Mm-hmm. My buddy Kerry Ward here from Vancouver ran Cocodona. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He made a great film about it. And, I have before Cocodona, because that's obviously a brand new race. Mm-hmm. I did have some of Candace Burt's 200 mile races on my radar. Tahoe, which unfortunately just got canceled because of the fires, or maybe even the Moab 240.
Yeah.
And for me, it's about, you know, I kind of have done a couple 200 milers, but I haven't done. I mean, those are very difficult races, but they're what I would consider faster races compared to the stuff in the Alps, where you're doing a lot of hiking and slow moving and dealing with altitude. Whereas it strikes me that those races, it's a little bit more running, and that actually appeals to me as well. So I would like to do something where I'm finishing in, say, 80 or 90 hours, as opposed to 100, 120 hours. You know, I think a day or two less on feet would make quite a difference. So it is my goal to do at least one of those one day in North America.
Plus that you did the Tour de Jeans, and that film was amazing. That must have been just so difficult.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the more difficult, I'm sure, races out there, and by far the one of the bigger challenges I've done. I finished in 107 hours, which actually, you know, put me in the top, you know, 8th percentile. So you can imagine there were people out there for even an extra day or two. The cutoff is 150 hours. So people were out there for close to a week, very little sleep, and just a lot of climbing, you know, several Mount Everest's worth of climbing over the course of that. And of course, the descent. And the descent is really what gets you. It's not the climbing, it's the downhills. These long, you know, 1,000-2,000 meter ups. So we're talking, what is that, 5,000-6,000 feet. And then 6,000 feet down, 6,000 feet up, 6,000 feet down. Just relentless climbs and descents. And then the following year, I did the Swiss Peaks 360K. So that was, I think that's 220 miles in Switzerland through the Swiss Alps, and very similar challenge to Tour des Jeans, a little bit of a smaller event and a little bit less supported. So the aid stations were actually much further apart. So you were on your own for 4 to 6 hours at a time. And that was actually more of a challenge just because of the lack of support. It felt a little bit more like an adventure at Swiss Peaks. And of course, it was a little bit further as well.
Was that one well marked? Was it easy to find your way?
Yeah, they're well enough marked for sure. The difficult part actually, so in the States or North America, when you race, you tend to be out in parks, right? We tend to run in national parks mm-hmm. or state parks. And in fact, speaking of Cocodona, I know Jamil, he mentioned that we're actually trying to bring the European flavor of racing to the US, where mm-hmm. you run through towns and the towns become part of the experience. Right. And that's very much what it's like running in, well, in the Alps for sure, where you're running kind of, you know, you're out in the mountains, but then you always come back down into a town and it's great, like these beautiful mountain towns. But that's where the navigation gets difficult. Funny enough, mm-hmm. it's counterintuitive, but the only where people get lost is coming in and out of the towns. Because that yeah. tends to be where they don't want to overflag, right, in some of right. these places. And
right.
whereas when you're in the mountains, it's fine because you're often on very well-established trails. Mm-hmm. Certainly Tour des Gens, we were on these two main routes. So we were actually just essentially following 200-mile trails called the Altavia 1 and the Altavia 2. So they're already super well-marked. I mean, there's no going off the trail. Mm-hmm. So again, it's only when you go off that route to pop into a town that it's actually tricky to navigate.
Right, right. Plus that Swiss one, there weren't that many people running it. And there's what, over 700 people doing the Tour des Gens, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think there was 850 doing Tour the year I did it. Yeah. And even that, I mean, by day two or three, you're kind of on your own. Like it's, you're pretty spaced out, but certainly Swiss Peaks by the end of the first day, I was on my own for most of the rest of the race.
Yeah. That's amazing. I have never done anything. I've done it 3 50Ks and I just love the feeling though that you're out maybe for an hour or two by yourself. It's kind of a cool feeling. But
it really is. Yeah. Yeah.
As long as you know that you're on the right course, it's okay.
Well, yeah. But you are doing it in a controlled environment. I mean, I like going out for long training runs on my own as well. Although I almost always run with friends. We have such a great community here. And in fact, I do a lot of training with my girlfriend, Audrey here. When you're racing, you're doing it in a safe and controlled environment. So, I mean, you know, there's a GPS tracker on you, mm-hmm. you know, there's things in place. So that is a good chance for those of us who might be a little more worried about running on their own to go out and do it in a controlled environment where, you know, somebody mm-hmm. has your back, you know, somebody is back and watching you. And if you go off course, they'll come and find you. So it is a good chance to get out of your comfort zone and to be on your own on the trails.
Right, right. She's amazing. I love the videos with her. And then the I'm super impressed that she can just rock those pull-ups.
Oh yeah, she's strong. Yeah, she's definitely strong. And our latest film from Quebec a few weeks ago is about to drop. I'm hoping maybe this weekend I'll be publishing it here. So this might be by the time people hear this podcast, I think the film will be online.
Excellent.
And she's featured heavily. It's really it's two perspectives on the same race. We both mm-hmm. We both run. And I won't ruin the surprise, but I'll just say Audrey does really well in that race.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. Yeah. I love the one where you both fast pack together. And I wanted to ask you about fast packing. So when did you mm-hmm. start fast packing?
So I started fast packing. I think it was back in 2014. I did the Wonderland Trail around Mount Rainier. Mm-hmm. And that's a 93-mile trail. Typically it's run over a few days, but a friend of mine did it over 2 days. So it was about a 39-hour effort where we stopped and slept for about 5 or 6 hours. So we carried all of the things on our back. And so that was only one night. So a very, very easy introduction to fast packing. And then the following year, I did the staged race that I mentioned, Grand to Grand, which is actually very similar to fast packing. You carry everything for the week. You carry your own food, your sleeping pad, your bag, your clothing. The only thing you don't carry is a tent. They provide a tent for you. But essentially you're fast packing. So that was another experience of, you know, I mean, really to say it like it is, the biggest challenge with fast packing is the gear. It's researching, buying and figuring out the gear, how to pack it, how to, you know, what gear works for you, what gear you need for different climates. The running is just the running. There's a bit of a technique, I guess you could say, to running with a fully loaded pack. And even that though comes down to gear. It's, you know, how your pack fits. And so a big part of it was logistics. And I kind of had that stuff figured out early on. Mm-hmm. But it was only in the last few years that I've been taking fast packing more seriously and have mm-hmm. done, you know, a bunch of 2 to 5 day fast packs, around this area here in BC and as well as down in the States, you know, running around on the Tahoe Rim Trail. And a couple other routes. But to be honest, I'm still very much at the start of my fast packing journey. Like I really look forward to doing a lot more of this in the coming years.
That fastpacking interests me. I mean, when I was young, I did a lot of backpacking. I have no interest to carry a huge pack on my back anymore. That doesn't interest me at all. But what exactly is fastpacking?
We'll be right back.
Hey, quick question for you. Are you someone who wants to be fit, healthy, and happy? And what if I told you you could get your dream body by simply just listening to a podcast? I'm Josh.
And I'm KG, and we are the hosts of the Fit, Healthy, and Happy podcast.
Listen, we get it. Fitness isn't easy. Carbs, no carbs.
Just stop, okay? It doesn't have to be that complicated. And that's why we made this podcast. We get straight to the facts so you can become your best you.
So the way to check us out is click the link in the show notes or search Fit, Healthy, and Happy podcast on any of the major podcast platforms. We'll see you soon.
Sure. Well, fast packing, the way I define it, and I stole this from somebody and I can't remember who, so I apologize that I'm not attributing this, but fast packing is jogging the flats, hiking the ups, and running the downs. So it's basically ultra running. You know, that's a lot of what we do in these long races, right? We do a lot of hiking and it's really just jogging a lot. It's not trying to push the pace too much. But by doing that, I mean, right there, you can cut down a 10-day backpack to a 3 or 4 day fast pack. And now you're carrying a lot less gear, or rather at least a lot less food. You also sacrifice comfort. That tends to be, so really fast packing is more closer to ultralight backpacking, where you're sacrificing comfort. You're using minimal sleeping gear. You know, you're not bringing spare clothing. You're just really, really minimal stuff. But again, you're kind of running where you can. And it really just allows you to do these longer distances in a shorter period of time so that you're actually able to carry everything you need with you on your back. So for me, I kind of feel like 2 nights, 3 days is the sweet spot. 3 days, you can carry all the food you need on your back. As soon as you get past that, you start to have to resupply, which again, now you're getting into more like a through hiking or backpacking mentality. Right. But finding a route like the Wonderland Trail, I mean, we did it over 2 days. That's too close to 50-mile days. That's a lot. But even fast packing something like the 93-mile Wonderland Trail over 3 days, where you're doing closer to a 50K per day, that's, to me, a perfect fast pack. Because you can do it without support. You know, you're not resupplying. You're just carrying everything you need. You're doing big days, probably 12 hours on feet. You know, you're still stopping and taking photos and enjoying it. But when you hit those flat sections, you jog it, you know, why walk? And when you hit the downs, you enjoy them, you run. But for the rest of it, you're kind of just hiking, but it makes a huge difference. Again, that takes your 6-day backpack down to a 3-day fast pack. And the other benefit, it's not just about going fast and things. It's that you can do a lot more. So, I mean, people sometimes will criticize, you know, the post comments in my videos and say, well, you're rushing through everything. You're not seeing as much. And there's some truth to that. But I mean, hey, we're rushing often on the logging roads and then still taking our time on the summit. You know, we're still taking photos and enjoying and soaking in the views. And the net result is that I can do a lot more in a single season than the average backpacker can. So I do feel I'm making up for it to a degree in quantity of things I can do. There's routes that most people, it would be a once a year or once a lifetime route that I can bang out in a weekend, and I'm back out there the next weekend doing a different route. And that, right, to me is really the beauty of fast packing. I can just do a lot more and really take advantage of my fitness.
Well, exactly. And you can get the trail in, you can get your run in without having to sacrifice, just do a hike without having to sacrifice your running.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's routes you can do as well without permits, where normally, you know, the Tahoe Rim Trail, for example, there's a section going through, I forget what it's called.
Desolation.
Thank you. Yeah. Wilderness, Desolation, yeah. Wilderness. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Where you need a special permit.
Yeah.
And we couldn't get one, but it was fine because that section we could push through in a day.
Yeah.
Whereas the backpacker couldn't, which means no permit, no backpacking.
Exactly. No, yeah. Exactly. Yes. Yes. And it's like for, it's great if you can through, if you're not a runner and you can through hike for, you know, for a month, that's fine. But who can take a month off their job? I can't.
You know? Exactly. But you might be able to take 4 or 5 days and maybe most of the route. And then where I want to take my fast packing to is to the Alps, or at least to Europe in general, the Pyrenees, the Dolomites, the Alps. There are, of course, amazing hut systems there.
Yes.
And
yes,
now we're talking about running with a day pack and you sleep at the refugios. I mean, how great is that? You eat there. So you run, you cover 50 kilometers with a little pack, just your safety gear. You arrive, you sit down for a beautiful pasta dinner, you sleep in a bed, mm-hmm. you get up and you keep moving. You know, you could fast pack the TMB, mm-hmm. the UTMB route. You could fast pack the GR10, which is the entire French Alps. Mm-hmm. You can do all of that with the 12-liter pack and while running on mm-hmm. these beautiful trails. Mm-hmm.
You know, you could do that at the Appalachian Trail too, because there's so many towns right next to the trail.
You could. Yep.
You know, yep. Yeah.
Yeah, I had a JMT permit. I was actually supposed to be doing the John Muir Trail this week. And unfortunately, I had to cancel for other reasons, but they did end up shutting down part of the route. Some of the forests in California are shut down because of forest fires. So it wouldn't worked out anyway. But the JMT is a good example of one that, you know, I was going to do it, I think, comfortably over 7 to 8 days, probably 7 days. And of course, normally that's a, you know, what is it, 20-day.
Yes.
You know, whereas taking a week off work is one thing, taking 3 weeks off is another, right?
Yeah, so, exactly.
The only challenge with fast packing in North America is bear safety. That's the biggest challenge. So JMT runs through Yosemite Valley, and Yosemite, you need to carry a bear canister. So I was going to have to bring a much larger pack than I'm used to and carry a bear canister. And that was going to, you know, sort of put a cramp in my style here, where normally I run with a 25-liter pack. I was going to have to bring a 35 and it was probably going to slow me down. So that's, and again, that's where in the Alps, there's no bears. You don't have to worry about that. So it's just a lot. It's a lot safer. It's a lot easier. So I'm really looking forward to getting over there and doing some fast packing in the coming seasons.
That sounds fun. So when did you start filming your runs?
I'm a professional video producer by
trade. Oh, you are? Okay.
So I run a video production company, and
I should have mentioned that. My mistake for not mentioning it at first.
I only say that because there still was though a point where I realized that, well, not that I could film my runs, but that I should be filming my runs. I didn't necessarily always do that. Mm-hmm. And then I realized, well, what a missed opportunity. I was filming early on. Like, I did a film on, for example, the Wonderland Trail that I ran that I mentioned in 2014. Mm-hmm. But back then, GoPro cameras in particular, which I use, were pretty bad quality. So it was hard to tell a compelling story, an engaging story, using these small action cameras. And while I owned very expensive cameras through my video production company, of course, I can't carry those with me. So it was only in the last few years where the quality of these smaller cameras kind of got to a level that I felt was worth, you know, where it became worth using them. And that was right around the GoPro Hero 6 that came out a few years ago. And I filmed my race, the Tour des Gens, with that camera. And from there, the cameras have only gotten better. And they're, of course, very small. The batteries last a long time. And I mean, if I'm counting grams, cutting cords and shaving weight wherever I can on my backpack and my gear, of course, I can't carry like a 5-pound camera. So that was really the kind of the moment a few years ago where I realized, like, okay, the cameras have finally got to a place where I can actually now tell stories on an ongoing basis. And since then, I've been producing content at a more kind of rapid pace.
Mm. Some of the filming that you get from the little GoPro is truly remarkable. I mean, it doesn't look like, I mean, you're holding it from a very long selfie stick, and it's just so smooth. It's amazing.
Well, thanks. I mean, the cameras have gotten a lot better, the stabilization. I can't take all the credit, but I do take some credit in that I've filmed with Steadicams for quite a bit of time over the years. And there's definitely a technique to even holding a GoPro and getting steady shots. Mm-hmm. For example, if I'm looking ahead and getting sort of a POV shot, I usually stop for a few seconds and walk very quickly because the amount of time you lose by walking for 10 seconds, it just makes your footage so much smoother. So there's just little tricks like that. And just the way you hold your arm, there's definitely tricks to that. But really, I mean, I do benefit. I bring all this experience as a professional video producer and storyteller to my adventure films. I'm not having to learn the technical side. I am still improving on the sort of artistic side. You know, I think there's lots to learn there. But again, I think I definitely am lucky in that I have the editing equipment. I mean, that stuff's easy. That stuff I've been doing since I was, I've been doing that for 22 years since I was in high school. So, so really now it's just, again, I'm just so excited to see that the equipment, that the tools of the trade are kind of catching up with where I personally need them to be. The 360 cameras, the Insta 360 is one that I started using recently. And I use it sparingly, but when I use it, I think when you're walking along a ridge and you get this amazing, you know, just incredible shot looking down on you, and it accentuates the exposure on either side. Like, you know, and of course drones, in recent years, they're becoming harder to use legally. They're pretty much banned in all parks, but where I can use them, like in Europe, for example, still they're great tools for storytelling. Mm-hmm. So it's a really exciting time for, adventure stories, adventure filmmaking.
Yeah, it certainly is. Now, if you don't mind sharing with us, where is your absolutely favorite place to run?
That's a tough thing to answer. I mean, I love being here in BC because it's wild. Mm-hmm. It's dangerous, you know. You know, I've learned a lot over the years, and I try to give back and teach a lot of what I've learned. Mm-hmm. As far as backcountry safety and things. But there's definitely a lot to consider here. But I mean, I think I wouldn't say it's necessarily my favorite place, but where I'm most excited to spend time in the near future is in the Alps. Mm-hmm. Because there's so much infrastructure there. You can just do bigger things. You can do bigger routes. And I would love to live. The problem is it's very, very busy as well. It's you know, quite touristy. But I would love to spend a couple seasons living in Chamonix or something and to be able to explore that region more. But I think if I had to pick one place, I mean, it's hard to beat here where I grew up in Vancouver. It's just hard to beat the access to the backcountry and the variety of terrain that we have here. So yeah, I think if I had to choose one, I'd say I'm happy where I am, but where I'm looking forward to spending more time is definitely in the Alps.
That's terrific. Now it is quite wild there. You seen a lot of wildlife on your runs in the woods there?
Yeah, I mean, we see bears all the time. We have a lot of black bears. Mm-hmm. We have grizzlies, and I've actually never run into a grizzly, but grizzlies are really what the worry is. Mm-hmm. Black bears, not to minimize the risk with black bears, but they tend to act like large raccoons. I mean, they run away from you. They're sort of scavenging for the most part in people's backyards here on the North Shore. Black bears can be dangerous, but the real risk is grizzly bears. That's mm-hmm. what you really have to be careful of. And we have a lot of grizzly country, and we do spend a lot of time in it. We tend to run in groups. We carry bear spray, make a lot of noise. There definitely are some preventative measures that you can take, but really grizzlies are what we're worried about. We have cougars, mountain lions, pumas, whatever you want to call them. You don't see them though. I'm not sure there's ever been an attack on a fully grown mm-hmm. human unless the cougar was emaciated. So you don't really see them. So really it's grizzly bears here that you have to worry about. But we have other types of wildlife too that are exciting to see. You know, mm-hmm. we have goats, we have, you know, a lot of marmots and lots of deer, you know, all the usual stuff. I really love seeing goats. That's really cool.
That is cool. That's very, very cool. Yeah. I saw a mountain lion once in the Marin Headlands.
You did?
Yeah. A small one. It was like 50 feet for me. Small. And I made a lot of, and I sang, and that'll chase anything away. My singing is really bad. So
that'll do it.
They
say, if you see a mountain lion, that it wants you to see you. Like it's saying something. It's saying, this is my territory. Get out of here.
Yeah.
If a mountain lion wanted to attack you, you wouldn't see it coming. It's coming from above and behind you. It's not coming from the front. So you were probably safe in that situation anyway, but yeah.
Yeah, it was a small one too. It wasn't big, and it was really far. It was pretty far away. So it was like, okay, you know, when it gets foggy up there, that's when the animals come out. It's kind of cool. You see the deer coyotes and stuff.
I've yet to run up there. I would love to, down there, I should say. I'd love to come. I'd love to do the North Face 50 maybe one day.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's neat because you get a mile in elevation, in 1,000 feet. I mean, it's that steep and you'll go up a mile and the down a mile and up a mile, down a mile. And it's just right along the ocean, and you can watch the whales but don't watch too carefully because it goes along the ocean there. There's this part of it called Pirate's Cove that is just really nasty and lots of steps. And it's really fun. It's just
very cool.
A fun place to run. Yeah. It's neat. Yeah, it's hard, but it's good training. Now back to your filming. Now you made the documentary of Gary Robbins' backyard 100 miler. It's really good. I mean, it's really, really good. How did that come about?
Well, I mean, I've known Gary for years. Uh-huh. We're good friends here. And Gary, I first collaborated with Ethan Newberry, the Ginger Runner, years ago on Gary's FKT around Mount Rainier on the Wonderland Trail. That film was called Wonderland. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of brought in as the guy that can keep up with Gary, at least for spits and spurts. You know, whereas Ethan was filming more at the aid stations and I was out on the trail with Gary. I covered a good 30, 40 miles. I think it was about 30 miles maybe of the route. Kind of, you know, as out and backs from different aid stations. And so, I mean, that's my strength as a filmmaker, is when it comes to not just documenting my own runs, but other people's, is like, I'm not the fastest, but I can keep up with somebody running 100 miles if it's for 20 or 30, while filming. And that's a difficult thing to do. So that was, I think when Gary, you know, it was during the lockdown here, and, Gary lives out in Chilliwack. So this is kind of, it's about an hour and a half east of Vancouver, kind of down the valley. And Chilliwack is the mountains border, the U.S. border. It's the Cascades. It's the Northern Cascades. And they're very different from the coastal mountains that are up here, kind of in the Whistler and Vancouver area. Very rugged, just wild, way less developed. It's almost all 4x4 access as well, a lot of it. So very, very cool terrain. And Gary had moved out there and really wanted to put this route together. And I think it was a long-term goal that turned into a short-term goal, because there wasn't really much else to do. You know, he couldn't race. He couldn't do Barkley that year. I had planned on going down to Barkley with him, and that all got canceled. I was going to crew for him. So I think it was just natural that he reached out to me and say, do you want to collaborate on this? And I went out and did a little bit of scouting with him on one or two days. So I was familiar with sections of the route. And then when it came time to film it, really, I just kind of went out and we didn't do a lot of planning. It was just, let me see how much of this route I can keep up with you on. And it turned out Gary didn't have a very good day. For those who haven't seen the film, it's it comes early in the film, so I'm not spoiling a lot. But you know, he wasn't having a great day, and so fortunate for me, he was moving slower than he probably would have been otherwise, and that made it even easier for me to keep up and to literally run circles around him in certain places. And to be honest, I wouldn't have been able to do that had he been feeling really good. It kind of just worked out. Yeah.
That's a tough route.
Very tough.
Gosh.
Yeah. Yeah. Only partially on trail, and a lot of it was off trail, like mountain navigation, route finding, you know, very, as tough as mountain navigation gets, really. Borderline what we would call light mountaineering.
Yeah.
You know, when we were scouting it, we had ice axes and crampons and helmets. And on the day, we were able to do it without those tools. But, borderline light mountaineering. So very difficult terrain, very cool, very, a true adventure. Like, you know, that was a true adventure run, that Gary happened to do as a 100-mile route, like really challenged himself, to simulate what it would be like to do a race like in the Alps, but right in his backyard.
Yeah. There's one section that you just look up and it's nothing but just these medium sized rocks. You just have to climb over. And it's just like, my God, how long did that take?
And the summits, like we didn't do a lot of actual summits. We were traversing more. Mm-hmm. But a couple of the summits that we skipped that we had done during the scouting phase, mm-hmm. they're definitely scrambles, you know, class mm-hmm. 3 scrambles. You're wearing helmets and, you know, you're using your hands for sure for a lot of those peaks. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. My fear of heights starts clicking in right there. It's like, oh, okay. I'll let you guys do that.
And then there's some routes that are, you know, Chilliwack is a large area. It's varied. Yeah. There are definitely some summits that are more, a lot. It's like the Colorado 14ers. I mean, there's mm-hmm. some easier 14ers and there's some more difficult 14ers. It's similar to that.
Right. Well, it's a beautiful area. The scenery is just, the camera work is just spectacular.
Really. Thanks. And it was mostly filmed on a GoPro. We had very nice light. We had beautiful morning light.
Yeah.
So it really, again, the camera, you know, the GoPro that I filmed on, I think that was the GoPro 8, quite good when it has enough light. It's not very good in low light. But I was lucky that I had some really beautiful light as well. So that everything kind of came together for that film.
That's very, very cool. Well, I know you have this big race coming up, but I have one final question for you. Other than this mm-hmm. big race you have coming up, this is what I like to ask all the runners on my show. If you could do any race anywhere in the world, regardless of qualification or money or travel, which race would you do?
easy. That's Hard Rock, the Hard Rock 100. I've been trying to get in for years, and it's probably going to take a few more lotteries, but I hope I'm getting close. I paced half the course. I paced a friend, so I've seen a good chunk of it. I've done a couple of peaks on my own. I think I've done maybe a half dozen 14ers now in Colorado, and I just love Colorado. I love Hard Rock. I love everything about the race, and I just that's easy. That's the one.
Well, I want to. Well, when you do it, I definitely want to see the film about it.
Oh, there would be a film for sure. Yeah. I think I would do it right. I would move down there. I would, you know, train and live at altitude for a few weeks. I would really sink my teeth into that one.
Yes, definitely. Well, thank you so much, Jeff, for being on the show. Your films are amazing. Your work is amazing. And now I know why, because I didn't even realize you had a video production company, but we're going to have all the links for that and all your films on the website when this is released. And thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate it.
No problem. That was a lot of fun.
And best of luck to your race in October. And you're going to
thank you so much. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And there'll of course be a film from that as well, kind of towards the end of the year.
Absolutely. All right. Yeah. And have a great race and great rest of your runs, and have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you, Jeff, very, very much for being on the show. It was really a lot of fun to talk to you. It was very enjoyable. I wish you and all the great runners in British Columbia much, much success. You guys just have an incredible place to run up there. The trails just look amazing. It just really so cool. There's that one that they did. I think they did the 100K right up in northern part of British Columbia. And it's just incredible where they're looking for that lost mine in the mountains, and they find it. It's creepy and fun all at once. It's great. Should do a Halloween adventure up there. I'm sure there's a lot of really cool ghost stories in those hills. All right, so that is that. So I'm going to have his website and all his information up on my website, martharunsworld.com, which you can check out. And I hope you will, because you really have to look at his films. They are really cool. Okay, now, next up, Tales of the Trail. All right, here is this week's Tales of the Trail. Like I said, we have a bunch of races that happen. I know there are other races, but these are the ones that I'm highlighting this week. The Miami 100 miler happened last weekend. Ah, yes. 100 flat miles in humidity. Woohoo! Sounds like heaven to me. For alligators, anyway. Okay, the top three finishers for the men. I don't have any times, unfortunately. It was weird because Ultra Sign Up had a little glitch where they weren't posting the times properly, so I can't give you the times of any of the runners. But these are the runners, and this is how they finished. 1, 2, 3. Dave Krupski won, and Michael Ryan and Harold Allen. And the top three women were our very own Lisa Devona. Woohoo! Yay, Lisa! And you can see the past episode that I interviewed Lisa, and I've forgotten what episode it was, but you can go back and look at that one. And then Sandra Villanis-Burris came in second, and Tara Kilcullen. And I apologize for not pronouncing your name right if I did not. And in the Bay Area, there was the Dick Collins Fire Trails 100K took place on September 25th near Lake Chabot in Alameda County. And that takes place on part of the Bay Area Ridge Trail, which I also did an entire episode on previously, so you can look that up as well. The top three men were Alexander Kramer at 9 hours, 56 minutes, and 25 seconds. Kevin Weil at 10 hours, 6 minutes, and 16 seconds. Ron Gutierrez at 10 hours, 16 minutes, and 29 seconds. Top three women were Roxanne Vogel at 12 hours, 23 minutes, and 46 seconds. Katie Burns at 13 hours, 24 minutes, and 41 seconds. And Ingrid score of Bohatti at 13 hours, 31 minutes, and 32 seconds. And the Bear 100 in Logan, Utah. Now, this is one tough race. I know this for a fact because I remember Corey Reese writing about how difficult this race is. It's all about elevation. It happens fast, and it keeps on happening. And he wrote all about this in, I think, his first book. And it's just an intense race. I've always wanted to do this race. I don't know if I'll ever get the chance, but I would like to. The top three men, Christopher Kohler at 17 hours, 50 minutes, and 15 seconds. Jeremy Humphrey at 17 hours, 56 minutes, and 3 seconds. And Jeff Browning at 18 hours, 28 minutes, and 48 seconds. The top three women, Casey Lichtig at 20 hours, 27 minutes, and 57 seconds. Caitlin Gerben at 20 hours, 45 minutes, and 48 seconds. And Anna Frost at 20 hours, 59 minutes, and 24 seconds. And finally, last but not least, in the Crested Butte 50K, our very own Allison D. Kirk, who I also interviewed in a past show, was an incredible guest, PR'd with a time of 8 hours and 58 minutes. So congratulations. Simply amazing, Allison. Well done. So we're very proud of you. We're very proud of all of the runners who are friends of Martha Runs the World. And we're proud of every runner who got PRs or who didn't. We're proud of every runner everywhere who gets out every day and goes for a run or walks. Even if you don't run, if you just get out and go for a walk, we're proud of you too, because that's what makes it amazing and great and wonderful. Keep going, keep moving forward, because that's what it's about, right? Then that is Tales of the Trail. Okay, that is it for me. That is the show this week. Thank you so much, very, very much for listening. Check out the website at Martha Runs the World. You'll find everything there, all the links to, I'm going to put the links to the races that I talked about. I'll have a link for Jeff's website. It's really cool. You got to check out his races. I'll put a link to his YouTube site because that's very cool. You know, you got to subscribe and watch his videos. They are really, really good. Go to my website and become a patron. Give a couple bucks a month. It really would help. I would appreciate it very much. And that's it. You can email me at martharunstheworld@gmail.com with your race reports. I will put them in Tales of the Trail in an upcoming show. And until next week, let's tie up our shoelaces and go for a run.